Welcome to Cinéphile, episode 5. Bienvenue chez Cinéphile, cinquième émission. Today, the two solitudes. Aujourd'hui, les deux solitudes. Shoot first, translate later. That's Married to a Frenchman by the Poly Six. Hi there, how are you? Salut, ça va? No, I'm not going to keep doing that. I have a little bit of a cold today. Last time it was allergies. Today I have another excuse. I've still got my hot lemon with honey in it. The tech guy and I are also playing with the sound and how we record and save files to see if we can make them a little smaller to better utilize the storage space I have at Libsyn. Actually, I would really love to be able to do this whole episode in both of my country's official languages, but I think we'd both end up a little mad by the end of it. But that gives you an idea, a little taste, if you will, if you're not Canadian, of how the whole idea of official bilingualism generally works. If you've ever watched a Canada Day special on television, you'll know that there's usually two hosts, one English, one French, and they just say the same things twice for both audiences. I have to say, though, what irritates me to no end is watching official speeches and press conferences on the CBC, which is the official English language network. And you know the speaker is going to repeat the exact same thing in both languages, but the broadcaster feels obliged to have a translator. So you hear the English twice, which is completely unnecessary. Yeah, that's quite possibly my rant of the day. The title of today's episode, The Two Solitudes, is taken from the title of a 1945 novel by Canadian writer Hugh MacLennan that explored the relations between French and English Canada from World War I up to 1939. And that phrase, The Two Solitudes, has since come to symbolize what's often a divide between the two cultures that make up this nation. And today I'm also going to break that rule I have of watching a film twice before talking about it yet again, because the tech guy and I went this week to see what's being billed as the first bilingual film ever made in Canada. It's called Bon Cop, Bad Cop, and the title itself is a great play on the phrase good cop, bad cop. It stars Patrick Huard and Colm Feore. I'll get to Patrick Huard in a moment, but let me start with Colm Feore, as he might be a little more well-known to those outside of Canada for things like Battlestar Galactica, Chicago, and the wonderful, wonderful film 32 Short Films about Glenn Gould. Here in Canada, he was in the miniseries about the life of the late Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau, which I haven't seen, partly because it came out whilst I was living abroad, and, partly because of that aversion to biopics thing I have. But Feore is an excellent, excellent actor. He's classically trained, and this year, for example, he's performing three roles at the respected Stratford Festival here in Canada, Shakespeare's Coriolanus, Fagin in Oliver, and he's doing Don Juan in both an English and French version of Molière's play. And his talents are really well utilized in the film Bon Cop, Bad Cop. Now, for Patrick Huard, if you don't know Patrick Huard, he's a household name in Quebec, but he's less well known outside. But you will want to know more once you see Bon Cop, Bad Cop. I've also seen him in a bit of a romantic fluff movie that was called Nez Rouge, came out a couple years ago. And I'll confess, he was also in a series called Les Boys. They made three of them. And I have not seen any of them, although I would really love to, because every time they appear on television here, they're dubbed. And, I'm also not into watching dubbed movies, so eventually I'm going to get to Les Boys. As an aside, there's some talk about making a movie out of the Stephanie Plum series of mysteries. One list I'm on had a whole discussion about who could be chosen to play Detective Joe Morelli. And here's the thing I've been thinking. If Patrick Huard could act with an American accent, he'd be the perfect Morelli. He's got the whole sexy, dangerous cop thing down in this film. And what's the name of the cop in the Tempe Brennan series by Kathy Reichs, the one who goes undercover? Andrew Ryan. Okay, the character's Anglo, but let's change the character, and Huard would be perfect. But I am getting off on a tangent. So back to Bon Cop, Bad Cop. Let me start by saying you don't go to see this movie for either the plot or for the car chases. The plot, the premise is that there's this disgruntled hockey fan out there seeking revenge on the agents and anyone involved in selling Canadian players and teams south of the border and thus ruining our national game. That's a little thin. And the car chases, well, I've seen worse. They're all right here, but, they're mostly there to pad the script a little bit. But as I said, you don't go see the film for that. What you go to this film for is the relationship between the two cops, because Bon Cop, Bad Cop is a buddy movie. Huard plays Franco-Québécois cop David Bouchard. He's a hothead detective given to breaking the rules along with breaking heads to get to the bottom of an investigation. His car and his wardrobe, make him a suitable candidate for undercover work in a biker gang. Colm Feore plays the Anglo-Ontarian detective Martin Ward. Ward is, in the tradition of buddy movies, Bouchard's polar opposite. He's smooth, he's straight-laced, he's well-dressed, and he does things by the book. So, of course, when the first murder victim shows up perched atop the border sign between the provinces of Ontario and Quebec, it's only a matter of time before the powers that be in the respective provincial police forces, the Ontario Provincial Police and the Sûreté du Québec, they decide that it would be better for publicity and thus better for the annual budget if they could get their two detectives to work together on the case, instead of handing it off to the Mounties, the federal police force. This scene where they you know, sort of tell them that they have to work together is one of the most priceless moments in the film. The OPP boss is offered the opportunity to explain the situation to the two detectives, only to have his speech interrupted at regular intervals by his counterpart from the SQ with the French translation. it's really quite funny, particularly, you know, if you like us here in, you know, Canada, get this this dual thing going all the time. And of course, this getting the two of them to work together is where the whole bit of trouble arises in the film. The bodies begin to pile up and the tensions between the two of them rise. But what brings them together in the end is a mutual respect for the things that they have in common, like, you know, the love of their kids and the need to see a job done. They don't like each other, but they do come to understand each other a little bit. They're both divorced, and they're both proud of and yet often confused by their children. A scene I particularly liked involves Bouchard teaching Ward, whose French was learned at a private boys' school here in Toronto called Upper Canada College. Not here in Toronto, but here in Canada, in Toronto. So his French is learned at, you know, a posh boys' school and by spending a year in Paris. And Bouchard tries to teach him the finer points of cursing in Quebecois. This is something that really resonates with me because my French is very clearly not Quebecois. For those of you who don't realize, Quebecois French has evolved vastly in completely different directions from, you know, Parisian French. I mean, you know, there are in all sorts of French, there are regional variations, and there are, you know, there's just completely different vocabulary between the French I learned in France and what, you know, they speak in Quebec. And the difference is so much so that, you know, I have Quebecois acquaintances that immediately know where I learned French by the vocabulary I use. And nowhere is this more clear than in the fine art of cursing, because Quebecois French relies heavily on terminology, you know, from the Catholic Church, the Mass, and all of that, to express itself rather colorfully. And Bouchard takes great delight in demonstrating the nuances to Ward, who actually later in the film manages to, you know, to show that he's picked up on what he's been taught. The film plays liberally with stereotypes that exist both in English and in French Canada. And many of the jokes might only be laughed at by Canadians, and Canadians of a certain generation at that. When Bouchard's boss at the SQ, Leboeuf, manages to butcher both languages, Bouchard wonders if he hasn't been taking lessons from Jean Chrétien, the former Canadian prime minister who is often incomprehensible in either language. Detective Ward comments at one point that stowing dead bodies in a trunk is a Quebec tradition, and you'd have to remember the kidnapping of Quebec Labour Minister Pierre Laporte in 1970 to really get the sting of that. The only thing that really irritated me, I mean, I can be forgiving for kind of a thin plot and this and that. I mean, it is a buddy movie, it's an action movie. But the only thing that really irritated me were the names of the murder victims, because I found them kind of clumsy. And I understand that they're supposed to reference actual figures in the hockey world, Pickleton for Peter Pocklington, the former Edmonton Oilers owner who was responsible for selling the Great One, Wayne Gretzky, south of the border, and Buttman for Gary Bettman, who's the president of the National Hockey League. And I suppose if you're a hockey fan, you'll find it amusing, but for me, they just clanged a little. And the film works, ultimately, because it has moments where it's sharp and it's scathing and often very funny. The tech guy and I haven't figured out if he's a coroner or works in the coroner's office or a forensics guy, but there's one character, Jeff, who is priceless. Bouchard and Ward go to talk to him about the first murder. The guy found atop the border sign. And he's rattling on in French, just woof. There's all of this technical stuff and this and that. And they leave, and Ward says, who, you know, speaks in French, says to Bouchard, "I think I only got half of that." And Bouchard said, "That's okay, I only got half too. As long as we got both halves, we'll be all right." It's this relationship between the two characters that's the thing we care most about in the end. So much so, in my case, that even before I left the theater, I was really hoping it would be a big success, so there would be a sequel. And one day I'll offer up my rant on how disappointing sequels can be. So that says a lot about how much I enjoyed watching Patrick Huard and Confieur. One of the great things about the film is that even though there are some characters who only speak one language or the other, both Huard and Fior's characters are bilingual, and they switch almost effortlessly back and forth between the two languages. And if you're thinking I can identify with that, boy, are you right. I do get rusty, of course, since I don't have a lot of folks to speak French with in my corner of the world. And I'm I like to say I'm imperfectly bilingual to begin with, but there are a lot of days that I spend, you know, just wandering back and forth between both languages. And I was really surprised because I had believed that Fior was bilingual. And I read an interview with him recently where he states he's not actually bilingual. And honestly, I was surprised because he has such a facility to work in French. I've seen too many films where it's obvious that even a good actor is struggling to cope with the problems of language, which involve, you know, more than just learning the lines. I'm suspecting, he said he was practicing with his daughter at home and that, but I suspect maybe he's, you know, more skilled than he lets on. But I do understand that reluctance because, you know, as I say, I do say that I'm imperfectly bilingual, and then there are days where I feel like my French has fallen right out of my ears. Bon Cop, Bad Cop was released a week earlier in Quebec than it was in the rest of Canada. And it set an opening weekend box office record for a Quebecois film. And before the English Canada release, it was sitting at, 17th spot in all of North America for box office revenues is what they were measuring. The one question I have is, you know, how will it fare outside of Quebec, where it's already a huge success? I sincerely hope it does well, sometimes I wonder if my view isn't colored by the fact that I am bilingual. I can often see both sides of the equation, even if I don't always agree with them. I would have been perfectly happy without the subtitles. Even if I do have to make a leap between my French learned in France and its Quebecois cousin. But how, this is, you know, the question that I wonder about, how will unilingual Anglo-Canadians feel about watching a bilingual movie with half the dialogue subtitled? I've already started a campaign via my blog to get people to go see the film. Honestly, I really want, I want a sequel. I can't believe it. The tech guy and I had passes. We were sent movie passes by the smart car folks when the Pink Panther movie came out, and we never made it. Partly because we didn't want to. It's hard for us to imagine the Pink Panther without Peter Sellers, but there we are. And, you know, we'd kind of been saving the passes for a good moment, and when we saw that Bon Cop, Bad Cop showed up miraculously at our local Cineplex way out here in the middle of the nowhere, I knew we were going to go this week and use the passes. And you know what? I'd go again. I'd even go back to the local Cineplex to see it. And like I said, I hate Cineplexes. But, you know, that one's a rant for another episode because I think I used up my rant at the beginning. In the meantime, and I apologize to those of you who live outside Canada because You'll probably never get to see it. I really think this is aimed at the Canadian market, given everything involved. But if it's showing where you live, just for the love of Pete, go see it. Go and laugh. Roll your eyes because there's a lot of eye-rolling moments. And well, just go to ogle Patrick Huell if you must, but go see it. In other news this time round, it seems that my groveling has paid off, and I'm delighted to report that the Chub Creek Dink Dolls will be winging their way to me from their current stop, Shea Graham, in Australia. And I do know that on the latest episode of Chub Creek, Dave suggested he was going to encourage that people grovel to try to influence my choice of where to send them next. So if you're on the list to get the dolls, head over to the Chub Creek page at www. Oh, no, I'm never going to hear the end of this now. At www.chubcreek.com and leave a message for Dave to play. As usual, if you would like to leave a comment about today's film or ask a question about anything I've mentioned, head to this show's page at www.cinefolle.org. You can leave a contribution in the comments to any episode, or look over on the sidebar to find my email address and the link to Odeo, where you can leave me a 3-minute audio message. You can even use it to grovel for the dolls, and I'll listen to it and pass it along to Dave to put on Chub Creek. That was Cinefolle Episode 5. C'était Cinefolle, 5e émission. Ciao, till next time. Salut et à la prochaine. Here's Alison Krauss to close with Montreal.
Spend a little time in Montreal. Fire in the sun, smoke screen covering over the entire city, and you know that I think that I saw you in a different light, whether or not it was the wine, a quiet determination, maybe something or someone that you didn't know existed in you, and I think that I loved you even more. So come on, follow me down the alleyway. I'm sad, I'm sad, it's hanging up right in the door, sitting on the steps in Montreal. Building held under by a desire to understand, and I think I got it. That mystery that I saw in my dreams became you in the flesh, bones and sat there in the background on the canvas, watching me, knowing every little fearful beyond which, quietly laughing to yourself. keeping me inside you and away from the fear surrounding me.
Spread your